Welcome to Geekstrom number 2, the podcast where I talk about things that I like with people that I know through the internet. I'm your host, Frankie, and joining me today are Jared.
Good morning.
Okay. And Anthony.
Good evening.
And good night. Was it the Truman Show? Is that what
yeah,
we just did?
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Oh, yeah. There we go. And we are all from what is essentially the website home for wayward boys, Hard Men to Please. And we actually have a podcast that you can hear all three of our beautiful voices on. Usually, I think there's an Ethan in there, but he's been cast away at this point. So he has a movie reference because we're a movie website.
Yeah, he's the Wilson to my Tom Hanks, whatever his character's name is.
So you infected him with whatever bloody diseases you have by slapping him in the face with your palm?
I never actually saw that film, so I don't know. I would cry if he drowned at sea, though, which I think happens at some point.
He definitely loses it.
I mean, I guess he floats.
I thought he, like, went home.
You know what?
The ball drowns, doesn't
it? I think Wilson might make it back to the original island, and then he becomes the new Tom Hanks.
Yeah. He gains sentience.
Castaway or something like that. But yeah, there's a Hard Men to Please podcast too you can check out on that website. Today we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones, which I'm 100% positive that no one else is podcasting about at this exact moment. but hopefully our hard-hitting crossfire-like approach to the content will keep you enthralled. So, Anthony,
hello.
You are kind of the resident Game of Thrones fanatic, I guess you would be. I think when you're not tweeting about how much you hate Donald Trump or anyone that's involved with him, that your number one source of material comes from Game of Thrones. Would that be unfair to say?
No, that's 100% accurate. I'm tweeting about Game of Thrones right now, actually.
And Jared, you just flat out hate it, right? You're just not a fan at all, books or TV show?
Oh, am I playing the heel on this one? I mean, I like the books, and I like the TV show. I think that the TV show's gotten a lot worse to the point that I probably wouldn't watch it if it was like this when it started.
So when was the not that we're going to use wrestling terms the entire time, but when did it turn for you?
I mean, I think that, you know, unsurprisingly, it's just more a steady decline, more or less, as they've either run out of book material or chose to disregard book material. You know, if it was too complicated or whatever, and they made up their own story about, like, the Sand Snakes episodes. So I think it's been a steady decline. I think, you know, I'm sure there are people who thought, you know, oh, by season two or episode two, it had already peaked and then it was all downhill. I feel like it had four good seasons and then a little bit, you know, declined as it went.
Well, I mean, that fifth season, I guess, would have been when we started kind of commingling the last parts of the book material, which I think was kind of the writing was on the wall at that point, because once, you know, you started seeing a lot of the stuff that was coming from the end chapters of the books where it had caught up, you're like, well, they're definitely going to do another season of this and it's going to be out next year. So what exactly are they going to do? And that's kind of, I don't know, I guess the overall theme of what this is about is what happens to a show that's based on a pre-existing IP when all that information you have runs out. Mm-hmm. So, Anthony, where are you still as amped for it as you were when it originally came out?
It's like complicated because in one way I am, because I have no idea what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So like before, like I would watch the show mostly to see the reactions of like my friends, like who have no idea. So, you know, like I would be like, oh yeah, the wedding, that's going to be a good episode. And, you know, I'd be like, hey, I had this like little shit eating grin and it was great. And then now, like, I don't know. So like, I kind of like, I'm part of that crew now where mm-hmm. it's like, I'm just as clueless. And I mean, the writing has kind of taken a weird, not as good turn in the like newer season. So it's kind of hard to accurately predict what's going to happen because it's Game of Thrones and everyone's going to die or something. And I don't know. I have a hard time, like, just, I can be excited. That's what I mean to say. But, oh, it's like, it's just a different sort of excitement, I guess, would be, I don't know.
I definitely know what you mean with there being an investment in it beyond, you know, just liking the source material and kind of having put in, you know, 6 years essentially into the enjoyment of this, or however long it's been. What's interesting for me, I think, especially since the beginning of season 6 and kind of just going through, is that I was very much like you. Like, there was an air of superiority that I felt, having been one of those, you know, douchebags that had read all of the books already and been like, yeah, oh, it's going down next Sunday. I mean, this was nuts, but wait until you see what happens in the next episode. And you just always had that kind of like, I think I know where this is going. You know, even something as simple as Ned getting beheaded, you know, like, I think that was kind of something that people were like, wait, how are they going to fucking kill that guy? That's the...
Yeah, that was a moment where I was like, whoa, holy shit, I need to fucking read these books so I can, like, yeah, know what's going to...
So, when did you guys read them?
Literally the day after the finale
of season one?
Yeah.
And what about you, Frankie?
Once the first episode came out and, you know, it got the buzz and everything, I watched it, was excited, and then went and plowed through the book immediately because I think I like to, when I know something is an adaptation, I want to see what the differences are. It's not from a story standpoint wanting to know what it is, but I'm always invested in the world that as it's formed and kind of lore and backstory and stuff like that. It's the reason that I like Lord of the Rings stuff as much as I do, because there's just such a wealth of information. And I was told by people that that was kind of what this was in the vein of, that there was like a rich history and there was, you know, especially since I knew that even though this season would end with a basically around the same spot as the first book, that there was more books I could read. So
yeah,
I plowed through the first book, then watched the season as it came, and then, you know, went on to read all the rest of the books that were available at that time between the first and second season.
Okay, so I'm at a different footing than you guys. So what I did was I always tried to make sure that I read the books after that material had already been covered in the show, because I didn't want the show to be spoiled. And I kind of like that method because then the show's fun. And then you kind of, it's almost like a behind the scenes or a, you know, missing, you know, director's cut. You get kind of the fuller picture of what was behind those events. And I feel like I like that method because I kind of miss out. Like when I read the Lord of the Rings books before watching the movies, and I don't really like that method because then you get, your kind of brain is occupied with like, wait, that is this what I'm, was this what I read yet? Is that what it is? Or is it turning into that scene? Oh, they didn't even do that at all. You know?
So you're saying that, when, I don't know, I guess 12-year-old me was sitting in the theater watching Fellowship, and there was no Tom Bombadil, that I was not, you know, I was not reading it appropriately or enjoying it in the right way. I'm totally teasing, but yeah, I know, actually, what you mean.
Tom Bombadil, I would say, is an example of those movies doing a good job in what they cut. I was,
yeah, 100%. Glad they cut that.
And I actually think it would be worth, I wanted to talk about what you guys thought was an improvement from, because I think the show is to a large degree very good, even though it's a very different take on the material. You know, they have the kind of rule, they don't do the, you know, character's thoughts, which is kind of a given for, you know, an adaptation, but they could have done it. And they don't do any flashbacks, although I think they snuck like one in at some point. But I think
it's a magic. Yeah, totally, with the three-eyed raven stuff.
Well, that was consistent.
The one with Cersei.
Yeah, with Cersei as a kid. That was the one time I was like, this can't be Cersei, because they've never done a flashback. But I think, anyway, despite the fact that it's a very different take, it's been a very, I don't know, kind of true take and worthwhile. But I don't know if... there's much in the show that was improved upon the book by what it cut. And I want to know if you guys had anything you thought, oh, it's good that they cut that plot because that, you know, was a waste. Or characters,
I don't think anything really. Well, it would be more characters for me, just because of the amount of people that, you know, like Marjorie and Loras, them being the only, are they Tarleys, Anthony?
Tyrells.
Yeah. Tyrells, damn it. There's too many. Oh, that's, yeah. Sam. Sam is Tarly. Fuck.
They live right next to each other, you know. Whatever.
We're going to scrub that part so that they're nerds don't get too really, don't get too mad at us. I think that they have like two other siblings, I believe. So when, you know, they get blow the fuck up and their line is essentially just completely wiped out, I think that has a little bit more gravity to it. And I think Rob choosing to have a more romantic reason for, you know, deciding to marry someone instead of the wife that was set out for him from old
Frey.
Walder Frey, you know, I think instead of it just being one of his daughters and he ends up marrying, I think, someone from another northern family or something like that, and that's why they get pissed off, you know, with it being something where it's, you know, for love reasons as opposed to, like, honor or duty or whatever. I think that worked out, but anything beyond that, I think there's a lot of situations where they will take an ancillary character that actually has a decent plot line and merge them into another person, like Jorah's.
Yeah, the grayscale, like, kind of thing.
That's the thing where I think that's, you know, especially considering that none of the other parts of that other guy's story are in any way involved, because, you know, basically Tyrion, when he gets to Daenerys' side, like, all the other stuff that had to happen to get there was just completely irrelevant, so that worked out. And if they had ever done anything with Gendry, however you say his name, mm-hmm. With if he like ever comes back,
oh, I think that'll back.
Be yeah. So that would be something.
Exactly. You think he's coming back on the show?
Absolutely, I'm 100% certain he's coming back.
Okay,
locked in.
I only say this because they brought back Beric Dondarrion and the Brotherhood after like four seasons of us not seeing them. And Arya's going up north, and I think they're all going to run into each other again, and it's going to be a happy little reunion, and they're all probably going to die, like, right after that.
Was that foretold by her running back into Hot Pie?
That's what I took from it, because, like, I mean, she's going back home, so she's probably going to see everyone she saw along the way, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming he's fucking done rowing, because, you know, everyone... well, like, everyone can get... that was, like, one of my gripes this season, not to change the subject, is everyone is so fucking quick to get everywhere. Like, one episode, John went from Winterfell to Dragonstone, but I'm like, that would take, like, months to do.
But, well, he got there, and then he's like, I don't have time for this. I was like, dude, you made an error then in coming here at all.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely... time is irrelevant. At this point,
that I mean,
yeah, they have teleporting machines or whatever. That's fine. But.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably like a pretty common complaint that I think they kind of sweep away as like, well, we're just skipping ahead. But I mean, it's worth pointing out. I mean, George R. R. Martin, I think he had planned when he first had the series that, because he started with people who were all pretty young, and he was going to do like a time skip, like a 5-year time skip. Where, like, maybe John got elected to, you know, the Night's Watch, and then 5 years later, you know, he's still the Lord Commander. But, I mean, he said the problem he ran into was the only two options were having people endlessly, you know, exposit what happened in those 5 years, at which point you'd rather just see it, or admit that nothing interesting happened. And that's kind of what the show's done. It's kind of saying, well... you know, Jon Snow decided he was going to leave, and then, you know, he left, and then weeks later, he got there, and meanwhile, Sansa and Littlefinger have, like, not furthered their relationship, you know, he's still there for whatever reason, And that's kind of the issue you get into. I mean, to put nothing, I haven't looked into, I've not attempted at least to like try to make sure all the timelines, you know, even make sense, you know, compared to each other. Because
yeah,
I doubt they'd have, but it does kind of give that impression like, oh, okay, so now even though things are moving quickly event to event, it's also giving the impression that like the world is a lot less interesting because like stuff just won't happen for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of, especially when you have things that are this epic and grand in scale, is that really outside, and it's, I think it's something that's just part of the suspension of disbelief when you're enjoying any kind of fantasy, whether it be sci-fi or not, is that honestly outside of the people that are pushing the story forward, nothing of import happens at all. I mean, like the biggest case for that is like Star Wars, where like there's like 15 people that make everything in the entire universe happen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one family conflict, essentially.
Yeah, and it's like, so with Game of Thrones, especially considering that when you have something that creates its own fandom, the way that Game of Thrones has, especially with, you know, the TV show kind of exploding the way that it has, is that a lot of times you have the person that you're rooting for the most, and they're specific plot line becomes the only thing that you actually watch the show for, which can make the rest of the stuff that's even supposed to mean things to you become almost unbearable. Mm-hmm. And seem like I'm not interested in this at all because it's not John. If it's not John Snow, I don't give a fuck. And which is not me, but
I think that's the trade-off though. I think that there are times in what I would consider the better seasons that you had that, like, you know, a storyline Cuisinart, where it's like you're only going to get like 30 seconds with each character.
Yeah.
But I do think that part of the appeal of the show is that it created the illusion that it wasn't a world where only like five people mattered. It kind of created the illusion that behind the scenes, and I mean, obviously the books do it even better with some of the like A Feast for Crows, showing like all the common people who are left behind. And I mean, like this season, I was thinking about it because, I mean, it kind of answered one of the questions that comes up from all the skipping around and kind of not filling in once you move ahead. When Daenerys gets to Dragonstone, you know, it's just like empty. And it kind of gives the impression that like all these castles where like major shit went down, but we haven't seen them since, like, you know, the Freys are all dead now.
No one was there to like sweep up the dust or anything.
Yeah. There's like, no like power vacuum or anything. It's just like,
or even it's like just squatters
waiting for, yeah, one of the main characters to show up again for that. It kind of to come back to life. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of like in microcosm, what I imagine is happening at all these different castles that are kind of vacant now.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm like, even like in the show sense, like Dragonstone is like strategically important. So like, why would Cersei and, you know, the Lannisters just let it be empty the whole time? Like, no one would think to go there and just, you know, establish a base if they know that Daenerys is crossing the sea, like to have some sort of. Yeah, that kind of annoyed me, but I mean,
especially considering, to piggyback off that it seems like everyone knows what is happening immediately.
Yeah,
I know that there's ravens and stuff that you can send or whatever, but honestly, especially now, and I know that this season kind of, because they know that it's ending, that like they don't have time to sit around and not let shit happen. Like the writers themselves cannot allow for that if they want to get done what they need to get done within the next two seasons. But something that's been happening since forever, it's like, it honestly is like they have Twitter or something. It's crazy how quickly everyone knows everything. And I know that it's just a vehicle for there to be narrative continuity, but it's just always funny where it's just like, oh yeah, because, you know, like they were obviously in their ships coming this way because we knew that shit. You know, like the strategic moves that are made by each of these people that it's like playing in the game is just hilarious how immediate it all is. It's like, yep, we knew that shit.
Yeah, and they kind of lose some of like the intrigue.
Before we move on to the next thing, I wanted to give you, Jared, a chance to answer your own question about whether things have either been removed or added that have increased the value, as it were, of the show.
I was thinking about this. I think that one thing that's kind of a slight give and take. I think it doesn't make as much sense, but I really loved the fact that they swapped out Roose Bolton for Tywin with the Arya scenes in season two.
That was
some of like that's probably the best of like the original work that they've done, I think.
Yeah, that was really, I mean, it was just super enjoyable. And I liked that, you know, they put two characters together. And one thing that the series does really well, both the books and the show, is kind of put characters together and strip them of the kind of fan knowledge that, hey, you guys would really like each other because you do this and you do this. And instead they let them kind of meet more like people who don't necessarily, you know what each other are about. That, and I think the best decision they made in the show actually was one of the best moments of the show. And they kind of copied and pasted that speech that Oberyn gives Tyrion about meeting him as a baby. In the books, he tells him that story as they first meet, as he's arriving in King's Landing, and it's kind of more of a, like, put down, kind of reminding him that he's, like, you know, a freak of nature or whatever, but not even impressive as a freak of nature. but in the show, it's this, like, really perfect moment of reminding Tyrion how much his sisters always hated him and making him, like, kind of push him over the edge in, like, despair. And then kind of pointing out that Oberyn, like, twisting it to show, like, you know, he doesn't see him that way. And I don't know. I think that him, the whole I'm going to be your champion scene is one of the best in the show. And so I think that's probably the best change they've made. I don't know if Anthony had a chance to answer that or not.
I think that was one of the better ones, too. Like, I think every... Maybe it's because I have a man crush on him, but pretty much every like every scene with Oberyn was like top notch. Like even the one where he was like talking to Tywin in private, and then I really liked all the Varys and Littlefinger scenes, even though they kind of went they were few and far between throughout the first season. And then I really also liked there was one scene in the first season with Cersei and Robert, and like they were kind of like joking around, and I was like I really like that. And
oh, they talked about like their relationship.
Done... Yeah, yeah. And, like, how
that's actually probably one of the best ones. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Because that actually is one of the few scenes that shows that Robert has like really specific competencies, but they're like, you know, all related to warfare and, you know, not governance. And I thought that kind of redeemed his character. In the books, he's kind of more of a dick.
Yeah. You guys are agreeing so much. We're losing this spitfire situation. Jared, say something inflammatory real quick.
Oh, geez, inflammatory. I can't think of. Oh, where the fuck is Ghost?
Okay, I guess I can't Anthony even get mad probably at that because was. I want the same fucking. I was wondering the same thing. Okay.
Well, it's to get to John and to piggyback off of that very. Fantastic point that you both agreed on about Arya and Tywin. Them meeting in a very organic way versus, and this is going to be something that was on the episode from this last Sunday. So, you know, if for whatever reason you haven't seen it, weird that you listen to a podcast about stuff like this, but spoilers, Jon and Daenerys meet, even though it's in the promos and shit like that. And it's been something that the fans have been hoping for and been excited for ever, you know, just the idea that they could be in the same space. And when, you know, I think as soon as the last season ended and she was on the boats and she was coming this way, I think that was basically, it was a foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because of the buildup and the fan clamor for it and everything, and that it, even though it's happening in a way that seems organic because it was a summons and everything like that, that it has finally happened. And I don't think that it really, in my opinion, lived up to the hype or the want. Kind of shows that maybe that's a situation where we're getting to an area within the story that's fan service, and it still makes sense narratively, but where it's like we're having things happen because they want them to happen, not necessarily because they make sense within the framework that's been kind of laid out.
I mean, yeah, like obviously they're gonna meet in the books, like that's pretty much like gonna happen. It's inevitable. But I think a lot of it also has to do like the initial meetup fell flat, I thought, because mm-hmm. it was like there was such a huge buildup, but it happened again so quickly, and I was like I feel like if George R. R. Martin still had like a say in the show, or like if he had like more creative control, it would have taken them another season to meet, and like they would have met at the finale, and that would have been like the big finish. But like, and then they're just like, all right, let's move along. John mm-hmm. and Danny meet up, and I'm like, oh, come on. But and I also wasn't too crazy about the initial meetup, actually.
I think the best thing to come out of it was Sir Davos's line. Oh, this is Jon Snow. Like they go over
a long list of
you didn't like that?
No, I feel like I always feel like jokes like that kind of fall into the like. Again, the kind of like you're saying, like playing to the fandom kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. like we get it. Her name wouldn't fit on a Starbucks cup. It's really long, and then it's like a kind of like a Buffy style joke, or even I don't know. I feel like they've leaned really heavily on Tyrion, like being just a guy who drinks. Like I know who the fuck is the mercenary who fucks Daenerys. He's something like, can you fight? And he's like, no, I can't fight. He's like, so you talk mostly, right? And it's like, well, I mean, come on. This guy's like a lord. You know, he's got a strategic mind. Like, you know.
He saved King's Landing from Stannis.
Like. Yeah, they shouldn't speak to each other like they're like in like, you know, the college lounge. And they're just like, you know, sizing each other up. There's like, you know, there's social hierarchies at play. And, you know, they have different, completely different cultures they're coming from. So. Mm-hmm. I feel like all those flat, awkward jokes are a little, like, we got to fill in this space here.
Well, it's like they're building up on, like, every character being sassy and, like, I'm like, oh, no, because, like Grandma Tyrell is, like, the master of that.
Yeah, yeah, but, she's the queen of Twitter.
Yeah, but, like every single person has, like, a snarky remark, and I don't mind it because it's, like, you know, it is, like, funny and lighthearted, but compared to, you know, like, all the other seasons, it seems out of place to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like stuff like the Hound saying he likes chicken, and I was like, I get it. It was a big meme last year. You know, you like chicken. I do think that scene fell flat. I mean, if you were given the task of, you know, all right, all this show, you got to wrap it up in 13 episodes, you would have to rush things along. Yeah. But it is one of those cases that there's really very little room for. Kind of meaningful twists. There's kind of not a lot of room for even tension, you know, like they get to the island, they're like, oh, give us your weapons. He's like, all right. They're like, okay. And then he gets there. She's like, you better kneel. He's like, no, I got a story about a Night King and I'm not even going to explain what any of this means to you, by the way.
Yeah. And then she has such a hard time believing that there's like an army of the dead. She's like, oh, that's a stupid thing, but I'm like, you ride dragons.
Yeah, she literally spent half the time talking about not only that there are dragons, but that there weren't any, and she literally
like magic's back
into existence. Yeah, it's like the most magical thing that's happened almost in the entire show, besides the face swapping and stuff. But she's like, but I mean, zombies.
Yeah, it's just weird that, you know, I think they almost put a pin in it, like when Tyrion's talking to him later and he's like, you really expected her to like just join your cause after like one conversation, you know, she doesn't know you, etc. And I was like, yeah, so like, why did any of this meeting happen, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do think that I think, you know, the word is, it's culmination. And I think that mm-hmm. all the best parts of the show for the first few seasons felt like the culmination of a lot of character traits and mistakes and just happenstance that kind of fucked up, you know, the best laid plans. And since then, you get these kind of moments that you don't feel that's like, you know, Jon Snow dying felt like the culmination of something. Him coming back felt like, well, we got to bring him back. You know, the show needs him.
Yeah.
And there was not much to it. And I remember that was probably the first, I mean, there were always, you know, issues with the show, I think. But that was the first time that I was like, oh, it's just like something big that you've kind of been expecting, you know, just as a show watcher, you're expecting for at least a year or, you know, since the mm-hmm. last season. And then it comes back and it's like, oh, this didn't seem like it had much of an effect on anything. And I think since then I've kind of had that feeling like big things have happened, but they felt so kind of flat because you don't feel like it's a whole, you know, avalanche of things coming together. It's just kind of the plot kind of tuttering along.
Yeah, like they happen because they have to happen for the sake of moving along, basically.
And I think to kind of, and I don't want to echo myself that much, but to kind of go back to, you know, the shock of Ned being beheaded early on and him being such an integral part, the type of person that, especially when you know you're in a series, you kind of expect to be there throughout the series. And then for him to just be, nope, we're going to kill him. He's, you know, he's dead. So it's not important anymore. In the early seasons of the show, you kind of felt that it's like, nah, man, no one is fucking safe in this show. I mean, when Khal Drogo died.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, this guy, I thought this guy was going to be like arm in arm with Danny the entire time. They're going to take over everything. They're going to go across the sea, all this shit. And it's like, nope, he died too. And all this stuff. And it was like, early on, you kind of had that feeling.
That whole first season was like that. It felt like the end of every episode completely changed the trajectory of like every character. And it was, I mean, I think that's why it had such a huge following. Especially Daenerys' storyline.
For sure. Especially, you know, when you end the show with her coming out of a fucking bonfire with three dragons, it's like, it kind of feels like there was a bunch of clout that it had to be able to pull that off. But it realizes now that there are certain expectations from the fan base about who's going to be around and what's going to happen. And that it's become more about that. And that's what I think is really one of the symptoms of it being outside of George R. R. Martin's original narrative. Not that this isn't any place that he would have gone, because it is 100% likely that it would have gone out the exact same way. But because it's basically in the hands of a completely different creative team at this point, that's why it feels like there's less impact.
Yeah, I think that's true, though. I mean, I think characters like the Hound feel that way very much. It feels like he came back because people really like the Hound. And then, I mean, they almost like had him go through this, like, now that you're here, what do you do? It's like the guys are like, well, you might as well join us. Because, I mean, if you just go back to, you know, if you try to live a peaceful life, then there's no reason to have you on the show. So why don't you join our team? And it's like, yeah, it's hard to believe you really brought him back for this purpose.
Yeah. It's like, if you're not going to just have him in that, like, very last episode of the last season montage where you just see him walk out of the front door of a cottage with an axe over his shoulder and then his wife comes in underneath his arm. It's like, yeah, I mean, this is a guy that was talking about murdering everyone in a tavern and sticking things up people in certain areas and stuff like that. It's like, that guy is probably... he's probably going to just continue to murder people and whatever. So you can't just bring him back, but then have him have like a happy ending, which was,
I mean, in the books, like we don't know if he's back or not still, but we do kind of there, you know, it's pretty much alluded that he's living with like the priests on the Quiet Island. And he's like, that's pretty much exactly what he's doing. He's a grave digger.
Yeah. But that's a setup for Clegane Bowl, Anthony.
Which it doesn't it's seem 100% like it's confirmed.
100%. If it's got a hashtag, it's confirmed. People were really, I think there was a small amount of time when people thought that Mama Stark, who in the books becomes Lady Stoneheart, was going to come back in some form or fashion, and she hopefully won't and has yet to. Are there any things that have been intentionally left out that you're totally cool with them having been left out?
Oh, yikes.
There's, let's see, the young Aegon and young Griff. I'm kind of okay with them leaving that out.
Yeah.
Even though I liked it in the books, but I feel like, even as much as I love the show, like, too many, you know, I think the average viewer isn't too smart. So, like, they have to, you know, so they have to simplify it, and it's fine. But it's like, if they introduce, like, 30 other characters, everyone, like, it's going to be impossible to get invested with like the time that the show has, like, you know, like look at kind of offshoot of that, Euron Greyjoy.
Yeah.
I hate because he's just a bad villain, not because he's like, I hate him. Like, yeah. He's just, I feel like he's just a shit villain who's poorly written and all that. But they got rid of a lot of, you know, they got rid of, like, him and his whole family's, like, squabble. They pretty much went along with that. And I'm kind of fine with that, mm-hmm. I guess, but...
I feel like I would take almost all of it. I think the only plot line that I really don't think... I mean, you know, budget allowing, if you had, you know, if that was no issue and if, you know, time was no issue, I would still take... I liked the young Griff. I liked the Quentin Martell storyline. I liked the... I forget where... Ariane or whatever Martell, her storyline.
Yeah, I would... Mm-hmm. I wish they had that because what they did with Dorne... in the show is like criminal.
Yeah, that was garbage.
the Dornish were the best part of the whole series, even though they're probably irrelevant anyway. I think anyone who wasn't in the pilot is irrelevant.
Well, I mean, I also I wish that I think they're doing as best they can with Euron, like after they've already got him off the ground in kind of a shitty way. But the book version would have been fucking intense because I think what's impressive about the book version is just how after Ramsay Bolton and Cersei and Joffrey and all these total shitheads, he's like still head and shoulders above all of them in terms of how fucking evil he is. And it's really impressive like that he could think of like how to make a guy that much shittier.
Like he shows up and he's already like off the bat when we first see him in the books, he's already like, I have a horn that can control dragons.
Yeah, I raped my brothers, and I'm going to like tie one of them to a mast just to increase my wind speed. He's just fucking terrible. But the only plot line I would just say, you know, go ahead and leave that is Sansa at the Eyrie with all that nonsense and little Sweet Robin. Yeah. And I do feel like they didn't do a good enough job in... making up for that and showing that she actually was learning some stuff from Littlefinger. I feel like they pretended like she did, even though she really didn't. But that
Littlefinger was actually like really stupid.
Yeah. I mean, in the show that there's stuff missing from that, but I really wouldn't mind them just leaving all that behind. So it's not really terrible that they cut it.
Yeah. I think that they really, and I mean, this is fine. Overall, but they really kind of held our hands and dragged us into the idea that Sansa had like this revelation really quickly by changing her wardrobe and making her scowl a little bit more, which was a bummer because it was kind of a more gradual and like Anthony was saying, like a very learned growth that she had as opposed to just being kind of like, oh, she's wearing a lot of black now.
Yeah, she's in the game.
So, yeah, so it's just like, oh, I mean, she is. Okay, cool, that's fine.
I guess.
Because really, she's, I think in this last episode,
I have a plan. Kind of, you're going to go get raped by Ramsay Bolton. She's like, oh, yeah, I can see the upside in this.
Which, that was the type of thing where it's like, because it was Jean Poole, right? That's who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was the one that got married, yeah.
Well, in the book, it also made sense, because it's like they were like trying to establish this person as like, so they had control over the North, the Lannisters.
Yeah.
And in the books, it's like, well, why would the Boltons like throw away the support of the king just to gain mm-hmm. kind of the North, which they already have?
Yeah.
So that was no good.
Silly.
I'll say that much.
Not a fan of that.
I do feel like Ramsay Bolton was kind of made into like the Heath Ledger's Joker of the series, and I didn't like that either. It was like, this guy can't just kind of come out ahead of every situation without explanation.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan of that only because that was another hashtag situation. That was the Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is kind of leading to this point, so they want to make sure that Ramsay is, you know, beyond the whole Reek situation and all that stuff, chasing people down with dogs, all that crap. It's like, we want to make him literally as detestable as humanly possible and then pay it off by having him murdered.
But, like, even in the books, though, like, Euron is still way more fucked up than Ramsay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even though Ramsay does, like, I feel like I enjoyed watching him in the show as opposed to reading him in the books, if that makes any sense, because I think the actor who played him is like great, and like it was like funny in a weird, sadistic, evil way.
You know what he like, was? He well, was like, if you took Dennis Reynolds and put him in Westeros, that's who he was.
Yeah, he's got the Ramsay system. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I mean, I did but, feel like no, the. Like, I felt like the problem with him on the show, like my problem with him at least, was that I got the sense that the showrunners like Ramsay. And I always got the sense that George R. R. Martin kind of held him in contempt as much as he holds all the evil characters in contempt. And in the book, he's really just an example of what an average, not very intelligent, you know, person can do when they have absolute power over someone else. So he's kind of so like a Noah Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I felt on the show they were trying to make him out to be some kind of, you know, mastermind, because it, you know, it gives you a feather in your cap if you have a, you know, a really great villain.
Yeah, and again, I think that's kind of a symptom of where they're at as far as the narrative concerned. It just, I think it gets tough, and you know, especially with something as big as this is, like think of, you know, and people will say read a fucking different book than Harry Potter, but whatever. I'm gonna make this comparison. If someone, you know, if Warner Brothers had been tasked with putting together like the Deathly Hallows before that book had come out, like, yo, we got to have this seventh movie out because we're putting one out every year and it has to be on schedule because we got to make that $700 million that we need because that we have that basically penciled into the budget. So
yeah,
let's get cracking. And they're like, well, you know that Ron and Hermione got to get together. You know that Voldemort's got to die and all this shit, but how do we get there? Whatever. And he just kind of is like, let's do all the things that we know that people are going to want. And then that can kind of water down what it is. Because you're still getting, you know, at the end of the day, all the things that are happening are still things that people want to happen. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that makes for the best story. So I know it's we're only 3 episodes into this season. At this point,
yeah, but we're almost halfway done.
Yeah, that's true, and it hasn't been bad. I wouldn't say by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
watched,
no way.
But it does feel like that it doesn't have the same pull. And again, you know, you kind of get into that point where it's not even it's not fatigue because that's completely the wrong word for it. But where it's like you know you have to watch it. You put in so much time and so much focus on this, and you've spent time, you know, reading the hashtags and kind of going through the theories and stuff like that, and seeing that stuff paid off has been fairly enjoyable, I would think. I think every person that thought that, you know, Jon Snow wasn't a normal Stark, wasn't just the bastard that we all expected him to be, I think when people actually had that, they're like, I've been fucking telling you guys that since the first book, you know, whenever that came out. I don't know when the, you know,
that was actually. I want to say it was 96.
Yeah.
The 96?
I think so.
Yeah. You know, people are like, man, I've been on these fucking message boards since dial-up trying to tell y'all that Jon Snow is this person, and now that they see it, you know, on there. But yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward, especially since they essentially have carte blanche. And I think, I might be mistaken about this point, but I think that they know what the end is supposed to be, based off of what George R. R. Martin has in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so that what we'll be getting at the end of this series will be what will eventually happen at the end of the books. So it'll be kind of interesting that, and it may not be, I don't know. I think that's,
you
know,
you can, I'm not 100% convinced that the ending of the show and the book are going to be the same. I don't think they are. And I say this because I read like George's initial, like, pitch for the it was going to be a trilogy, and uh-huh, it was all sorts.
Was that supposed to be like Jon and Arya get together?
I think it was like Tyrion and Arya get together, and I think the White Walkers were called like the Neverborn or something like that. And thank God that changed. But like he changes like plots and directions and endings all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said himself when he writes, it's more like gardening than building like a house. And obviously we know he takes his sweet fucking time with it.
But, yeah.
Like, I really think he'll change his mind, by the end. Mm-hmm. Like, he might still, like, he might know, like, oh, this is what's going to happen with Daenerys and Jon and, like, Bran. But, you know, like, everything else, I think he'll probably change something along the way.
And what's interesting about it is that when we were talking about how we like to consume media that's kind of, you know, segmented out in this way, where you can kind of catch up to it or choose to wait until after you're done, we're all kind of at this point, if we are watching it, forced into a situation where if we do read the books as well, we'll have to read them after the rest of the information has come out in the show. So I think that's kind of new territory. I think maybe a comparison could be like some of the Walking Dead stuff, but that's more because they just created so much other content within the TV show's story that, you know, that it just made it like a completely different story, basically.
Yeah, that's a good example. I mean, anytime that they're running, you know, a stride, I always wonder what, you know, who's the first guy who's like makes the first decision of a major thing they're going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think in the shows probably was Robb Stark's wife. I don't know if there's anything that was too big before that. I think season one is almost like point for point out of the book.
There are a few minor like things, but ultimately, yeah, season one and book one are pretty much as close as you can get.
All right. Well, do you guys have any parting thoughts before we move on to the news roundup?
Yeah, I feel like we didn't talk about Bran, which normally I'm okay with because I fucking hate Bran. But I think I really kind of really like, I liked what they did with him this episode, which I've been pretty critical over this one, but I really liked the Bran stuff because everyone I know is like, why is he being such a dick? And I'm like, because he's a god now. And like,
he's so Dr. Manhattan. Like,
no, yeah, well, he is. Oh, like, wow, he's so disconnected from like everyone, and he can see everything that's ever happened. And like when Sansa's like, Bran, she's like, oh, happy to see him. And he's just like, hello. Like he just, he's just like lost in his own like Black Mirror world. Like he's seeing a bunch of shit and we have no idea what he's seeing until he tells Sansa, yeah, like, hey, I saw you the night you got raped. And I was like, why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah, I thought it was
a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, it was like a little gauche, Bran, to bring that up. No, what was weird is that like a second before that, she's talking to Littlefinger, he's like, you know, make sure you fight every battle in your mind, look at every eventuality. And then like 2 seconds later, she's like, hey Bran, what's up? He's like, I see everything that's gonna happen. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's a cheat. I guess fuck that guy's advice. Why don't you just tell me what's about to happen? Does Bran know that? I guess he knows Rickon's dead then? Doesn't need to be told then?
I think he knows everything that's like happened to his family.
Okay.
But like he's like sitting at the Weirwood. I think he's gonna turn into the, like, he's gonna become part of the Weirwood tree, like the original three-eyed raven.
Hmm. Oh, he's gonna get like absorbed into it, and it's gonna, yeah, kinda, like, form around him and stuff.
Yeah, kind of like Blood Raven from like two seasons ago or last season.
Interesting.
His name is Blood Raven, but they don't mention that in the show. Just a little FYI.
Just in case you guys were wondering.
Yeah, he was a Targaryen. No big deal.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, how many episodes in we're going to get before they kind of bring that part of the kind of more magic aspect of the show back in. Because we're really in the, like, the minutiae of the, you know, troop movement and, you know, sea battles and, you know, even fucking debt collectors and stuff at this point, you know, so it's just like, how would, you know, it's like,
yeah,
we
that's
saw
a good point.
Some dr-
oh, that
some
was
dragons
another thing
do.
I wanted to touch on was
go ahead.
The fucking Iron Bank. Just a little nitpick. The whole, another,
the
another
slavery thing?
Yeah, that pissed me the fuck
off. Yeah,
because
that's a free city,
so
right?
Mad. Yeah, like, yeah, no, the city was founded by slaves from Valyria. And they, like, are vehemently opposed to slavery in all forms. So even though it's a bank and banks are evil, like, they're not gonna be like, oh, the slave trade is bad. Oh, that's not good for us.
I actually turned to my wife and I said that because I was like, did they not read their own fucking book? Like, I'm not an obsessive about it either. I've gone through every book once, you know. But it's,
yeah, like,
it's like, come on, guys.
They just wanted to get the dude from Sherlock in there.
Yeah,
that's all.
I love seeing when they get like Jonathan Pryce or I forgot his name. Who's the head maester?
Oh,
Sledworth.
The new one or Pycel from the old?
No, not Pycel. Not the old guy. No, the new one.
Qyburn.
Marwyn.
Yeah,
Jim Broadbent.
Frank Butterford.
Yeah, I fucking love Jim Broadbent, and I love when they have opportunities to, like, really seamlessly, I mean, obviously not like Max von Sydow, he, like, looks nothing like the guy, you know?
Yeah.
But when they can really seamlessly bring in, I mean, kind of like Charles Dance, who, I mean, not that he was, I knew who he was before that, but they get these actors who kind of just fit right in, it's always appealing, even if, you know, you're not psyched about, you know, the show generally, which I'm not really anymore, but little stuff like that I still enjoy a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think and he had one of the better non-joke jokes where he's like, oh, do you think you're gonna get rewarded for not listening to me? No, fucking copy down these pages here, buddy.
I think
they could pay that off if they wanted to by making it relevant to,
like, useful info.
Yeah, but I think it'll just be kind of a throwaway thing.
Man, I hope it's not a throwaway. I was expecting, like, that was going to be a Mr. Miyagi kind of situation.
Could be. I was wondering if they were going to give him a chain or a link or whatever they call him.
No, and I don't know if they were going to do that, but that was, like, the only time I think Sam actually, like, read anything, like, when he was told to read something.
Yeah.
During his time, like, at school, basically.
I did like that the big revelation of him going there was that there was dragonglass at Dragonstone, which he was told like two seasons ago by the guy who lived at Dragonstone.
It's like, ah, shit. I knew that, but I'm going to just be like, oh, I read it in the book today. He needs two sources, unlike a lot of the news.
But that maester is actually, he's in the books, and like he's mentioned in, I think, every book. Like, in the first book, Mary Mesder, the witch who got burned by Daenerys, she actually mentions a guy named Marwyn who went over there and, like, taught her how to, you know,
do medicine. Wait, he's not Marwyn in the show, is he?
I think he is.
I thought Marwyn was a different... I don't think he was the Archmaester of the Citadel. I thought he was kind of like a guy on the outs because he believed in magic.
In the books, he's, like, an outsider. But, like, I think in the show, I'm pretty sure that's Marwyn.
Oh, that's cool.
I feel like
I haven't paid attention to the credits.
Yeah, my prediction is that, like, Sam is gonna be like, oh yeah, Jorah said he was gonna find the Dragon Queen, and then Marwyn's gonna be like, wait, what the fuck, Dragon Queen? I'm gonna go there. And then,
oh, that'd be boss. I feel like a guy like Jim Broadbent is probably on lease, so I don't expect he's gonna be super involved in the show going forward. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. He's doing a good job. For sure, I like his demeanor and his delivery. It's just he's the exact same guy in everything that he's in. I think he was in The Borrowers, and he was the exact same guy in that. So, but I like that guy that he is in everything.
Yeah, he's a nice guy in the stuff he's stuffing.
You know what I don't like, and this is a great segue into the new stuff, which I think I might continue to call the Geekstrom Maelstrom, because there is a cool little jingle that I ripped off from The Price is Right. And that's where it would be playing right now in the background of me saying that. You know what's not cool? And also slavery related? That show, Confederate, that they're thinking about doing?
Christ. Oh, for fuck's sake.
I was going to ask you guys if, based on Game of Thrones, like, obviously we're all connected to the, this world, but, like, based on this show, like, the last few seasons, would you watch an original series from these guys?
Maybe, because I know, I already forgot his name, David Benioff, he's, like one of the showrunners. I know he's actually a good writer, because I've read, I think, one or two of his books, and I really liked one of them, City of Thieves. That was a really good book, and I'm like, I know he can write.
So is the other guy the dick?
Probably, yeah. Maybe he's getting bullied. I don't know. I don't know what he's done, but.
Well, I just don't. I don't like, especially with everything that's going on in our particular country at this moment. I just don't.
Yeah, and, it's like, why choose that topic?
Yeah, it's like it doesn't. And I think, you know, you've got a Man in High Castle,
mm-hmm.
Which is out, and you. I mean, there's been a lot of successful alternate timeline fiction stories that have been interesting, you know, and there's been shitty ones like, I don't know, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which I don't think is based
don't
on...
speak ill
that's not Vampire really Hunter. Alternate reality that happened.
I'm kidding, that's it.
That happened.
I just that's what I'm saying, it could have happened, we wouldn't know.
No, it happened.
Maybe that's why he got shot in the head. Maybe John Wilkes Booth
is a silver bullet.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was a werewolf, isn't that? When did that happen? Confirmed. By the way, though, like, where was that underworld that now werewolves and vampires are like in opposition to each other?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, they've been I think that's for, like,
yeah. Because usually,
you say Narnia?
Any kind of lycanthropy is all interrelated, and I think fucking Dracula at some point was able to turn into both. Really? But yeah, the Underworld franchise was like, nah, we're gonna make them fight each other. And then one of the things that happens is they find a guy that is both, so he can turn into both at the same time.
I saw
time.
That
it's
movie.
Like a,
but he's bluish?
Yeah.
Oh, stupid as hell.
Yeah, it's weird. He actually looks more, if anything, it looks kind of like a drow elf.
I'm tapping out. I have no idea what that is.
I was gonna say, I'm glad that I'm talking to you guys, because if I had said that anywhere else... And had it recorded, I probably would have been beat up real bad.
Yeah, you'd have a huge fucking wedgie right now.
Yep. So, gonna come back from that and say that, no, I don't think I want to watch Confederate, because I don't want to live in that world, even if it's a, you know, a TV show. Especially considering that I think, if I was reading the synopsis correctly, that it's either leading up to or right after the third Civil War. So that
no take back
the South
guys.
Had like the South had like successfully seceded and had been fighting, and that slavery is a component that has been completely industrialized and has just been integrated into every aspect of life. And apparently they tried to fight at least one more time to get it to not happen, and it didn't work. And then they're either about to do it again or had just done it again. So it either has failed twice or failed three times at the point that we would be watching this show. And I can't imagine that whatever message it is that they're trying to convey is going to come across in a way that is palatable. I just don't.
Well, I mean, because one of the problems with the show is that, like, at every opportunity, they've leaned in a lot more on, like, graphic rape and stuff like that, where it's not really necessary to the narrative. And so when you have a setting where, you know, wanton rape and, you know, beatings and all sorts of really, you know, dehumanizing activities are kind of going to be par for the course, it's like... I mean, I wouldn't even watch if these guys just did like a detective show just based on the kind of writing and plotting of the last, you know, two seasons. But if it's something like that where it's like, oh, yeah, every episode is going to make you really uncomfortable. Fuck that.
I mean, I'll watch maybe the pilot episode or the first episode. But my fear with it is that it's going to be one of those things that like. It, you know, humanizes, like, slave owners, and, you know, some of them weren't that bad in the Confederacy, and I'm like, shut up. Like,
yeah, like,
don't,
like
we
the,
don't need
the Brad
that
Pitt
right
in 12 Years a Slave type situation.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Dude, I was so pissed off because, like, he produced that movie. So he's like, hey, let's make a movie where I'm the world's most, you know, reasonable Southerner.
Fucking ridiculous.
I'm the only
and he just
racist.
Also wanted a chance to you know, get paid to not take a shower as opposed to just not taking a shower normally.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard about that, by the way?
No, what? I know Viggo Mortensen didn't take showers during Lord of the Rings, and I respect him for that.
I think Brad Pitt in his normal life is a famous non-showerer.
Fuck him.
Just doesn't like to shower.
Those Brad Pitts, am I right?
That's why they're done.
Woo, nailed it. And you know what? That is a Jared, you're killing it with the assists on the segues here. Because we're going to talk about something that is also not funny in any way whatsoever.
Hygiene?
And I'm was that?
Hygiene?
Well, sort of. A poop emoji, who was one of the stars of the Emoji Movie, which up until I think today had a 0% score on Rotten Tomatoes, and unsurprisingly, almost beat Dunkirk.
Really?
At the box office this weekend.
Oh my god! I mean, the poop emoji was isn't that Patrick Stewart or someone played?
It was Patrick Stewart. We talked about that in
like
the,
he can't possibly need money anymore, right?
No, and I mean, it's not like he doesn't do good stuff. He did Green Room, what, 2 years ago at this point, which was fantastic, and he was awesome in it as you know a skinhead essentially. but like, yeah, I just don't understand. And what was great though is I think a lot of people were really happy. Do you guys know who T.J. Miller is?
Yeah.
He was in this movie.
Yeah, he's the lead,
a lot
isn't
of people,
he?
I think so. And I think a lot of people were very upset with him recently because he said that women are not funny. So he was, well, people were really excited at how bad this movie was received.
Because good, like, except I'm pissed off that it made as much money as it apparently made.
Yes, it made a chunk.
What parents are taking their kids to see that? That's like child abuse.
I wonder if it's like a situation where they're like, it's animated, so we just go.
I think that is.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. That's not good. You know, like especially considering, and this is a topic that we broached after the podcast last time. But you've got a wonderful parent like Jared, who takes his and I'm being facetious here, his 2-year-old daughter to see Logan.
She's 5
in theaters, and that's good parting. I'm gonna put it out right now. That
she liked the movie, folks.
Choice,
I mean, it's an empowering movie for little girls. The girl beheaded a whole bunch of mercenaries.
that head throw when she comes out of the building and just chucks. Oh, that's so good. That's just so good.
Yeah, and she's like, we're walking out. She's like, oh, I like that she had claws like the old guy. Who she calls Scratch Man.
No.
Yeah. No, I read one of the pull quotes from the Emoji Movie reviews was, disregard that PG rating and keep your children far away from director Tony Leondis's vile animated faux comedy. Beneath its trippy surface lurks an insidious philosophy hazardous to impressionable minds.
Wow.
That was a Thomas Laughley. I don't know. I mean, I've heard that like so many of the reviews of this are like just like really dark. This other one is abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to watch it now. Going down the rabbit hole.
I'm gonna have to wonder like how it compares to Sausage Party then, which had an interesting through line with all of it, and then you know ends in a literal food orgy, which was
nice.
Just
I
know,
somehow missed that one.
I think it's on Netflix, so if you want to watch it, you know, go ahead.
But it reminded me of the trailer, scene. And I just didn't care. I don't know.
It was okay. Yeah, you know, I think I got taken to it for free, and I was like, for a free movie, that's not bad. But you remember in Team America when they had the puppet Kama Sutra? Essentially,
yeah.
The end of Sausage Party feels like that. We're just like, I know why this is happening, but at the same time, I'm not sure why this is happening. But you know, here we are. Those people are making a lot. I think Trey Parker only needs to win an Oscar to be an EGOT. So I mean,
really? They won an Oscar. They got an Oscar for best song from the movie.
So there's one that he has left. Maybe I think he's got
Tony. You would know this, Anthony.
I actually don't. I
think
I
he's got
know.
The Emmy, right? For South Park. He's got to have the Emmy.
Uh-huh.
He's got a Tony for Book of Mormon.
What the hell is a radio
Oscar.
A radio play maybe?
what so Emmy, Grammy.
Oh.
Oscar Tony
maybe
so
it's Grammy,
I guess.
I would be surprised if they didn't win a Grammy for, like, the Book of Mormon or something. I don't know.
One day.
Time for you gotta have a correction section where you come back to this stuff in the next app.
Oh, well, I don't wanna take from your format with the, you know, corrections, additions, and fuck yous from the critically acclaimed Hard Men to Please podcast.
It's a good that you podcast, can listen to. Folks.
The last thing that I have is are you guys familiar with the Captain Marvel movie that will be coming out within the next 2 years?
Is that Shazam?
A little bit, yeah.
That is not Shazam. I think this is a conversation that we had almost, and it started out almost the exact same way last time, but this is the Marvel one with the lady.
There's a, oh, is that the lady that Rogue takes her powers from?
Yes.
Was Ms. Marvel, not PC anymore?
At that point, yeah, she's Ms. Marvel, but then...
Captain Marvel?
She becomes Captain Marvel because she becomes the captain of space, essentially.
The captain in space, okay.
Of space, of all
mean,
of space.
I mean, so in the Marvel universe, no one rises above the rank of captain. Like, what the hell? Is Sergeant just, like, too big of a... I'm sorry to all the military fans if Sergeant is lower than captain. Lieutenant?
I think Nick Fury is a colonel, I think.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, I don't know anything about the military or anything, so I don't know, but... Like, there's no, like, Brigadier General or the Avengers, like, nothing.
Supreme Allied Commander,
yeah,
America.
Captain's got a lot more leeway, because you could be, like, a captain of a ship, like Captain Han Solo. You could be, like, Captain Crunch. a lot of captains. I mean, if you're a lieutenant, Sergeant Slaughter was cool. That was a good way to get Sergeant in there. But, yeah, Admiral's pretty boring.
Excuse me, but Admiral Akbar in Star Wars is one of the most important characters of our time. But yeah, overall, yeah.
So I'm guessing that's a no from both of you about Captain Marvel.
Oh, the Captain Marvel movie? I mean, did you ask if we'd see it?
If you knew anything about it.
I know very little.
I know that the last female-led comic book movie before Wonder Woman was like fucking Elektra, which is...
Yeah,
kind of. That's pretty bad.
No, essentially, there was also Catwoman with Halle Berry.
Was that before Elektra though?
I don't know.
I mean, they were both terrible. Long time ago. Those are like early like mid 2000 movies.
Essentially, the reason that I brought it up is because it's supposed to take place in the 90s, which would put it well before any of the other. Marvel movies thus far, and I wanted to see what you guys thought about using us, because they're leaning on it as far as like any of the information that's coming out about it right now as it being a movie that takes place in the 90s. So a movie that is based on a pre-existing property but is also using a decade specific to kind of influence, so similar to the way that the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, even though it was in space, used like the 60s to kind of the 60s and 70s to kind of create its background with the music and everything. So kind of leaning on jokes and media and stuff from a specific decade to kind of help shepherd a movie along. What do you guys think about that? Is it gimmicky or, you know, basically that?
I mean, I'm curious why they do it. Like, I mean, why was, like, I got, like, Wonder Woman was in World War One because that was, like, the war to end all wars. Captain America had to be from the World War Two. But I don't know if there's maybe, like, a reason behind that, if it kind of gives them a little more leeway in terms of their properties. You know, they kind of get some distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we don't have to, you know, explain why she didn't call Iron Man, you know?
Yeah.
I'm 1000% all of fucking about this right now that I know that. I didn't know.
Oh,
it was like
okay, that's
in
good.
The 90s. I'm like, oh, this is going to be cool because I'm one of those horrible 90s kids. And
damn it, me too. Fuck.
I am a sucker for, you know, like nostalgia and, you know, like callbacks. And I'm, oh, Captain Marvel's playing with a Tamagotchi. I used to have one. I can relate. Like, I'm all about that.
Long into the movie runtime, post opening credits and everything, do you think that they play a Nirvana song?
Literally, like, as soon as the opening credits start.
Yeah, like, before 1993 fades on screen.
You think they're going to go Smells Like Teen Spirit just to kind of just go all out for it?
I don't know. They might take something else. I do feel like I was really pissed off that none of the X-Men movies gave Rogue like the power. As a kid who, I mean, I'm not born in the 90s, but I grew up in the 90s cartoons, and the X-Men cartoon was the shit. And Rogue was, you know, the strongest out of them, which is pretty cool. And then in the fucking movies, she has none of those powers. And it's like, come on! What the hell?
Like, so, they let her heal herself and then use Magneto's powers against her will. Yeah. And that's about it.
Yeah, she could suck people's life force, like, but unwillingly, which is a good... I like that, but I don't know, I always liked... I don't want to get into a side thing about why that show was good, but I always like characters that have like weird kind of side powers. They're all not one complete package, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, back then, Wolverine's claws were not a mutant power, by the way. Back then, they were completely ancillary. He would have had them whether, you know, he was a mutant or not, and it was kind of cool. Because all those episodes they had where they would all lose their powers for whatever cockamamie reason, he would still have his claws.
Are you saying that the X-Men TV show canon is the true canon?
I mean, to me, it is.
In your heart?
That's fair to say.
Yeah. I think...
I have no fucking clue what the movies are about, by the way.
You haven't seen the X-Men?
I really liked Logan. No, like, I watched 1, 2, 3, and then...
Ooh.
I think I watched, like, the Wolverine Origins movie.
Oof.
And I didn't like it. And then... And then I didn't watch, like, Future Past, or I didn't watch, like, any of those. And then I watched Logan, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on, but I like it. And then I tried like, looking up. Like,
his name is Scratchman. Thank you.
Scratchman.
His name is Scratchman.
That's true. So I looked up, like, you know, Scratchman, and I tried to, like, make sense of, like, the movie timeline. And I could watch all of them right now. I have no fucking idea, like, what the timeline's like, or... So the cartoon is canon, and that's it. Nothing else matters.
I like it. You want to know why I'm down with the cartoon being the true canon?
Why?
It's because there has never been
in the cartoon.
I actually don't like Gambit at all.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
Okay, well you're wrong. But go on.
The version of Beast in the X-Men cartoon is the best version of Beast.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no better Beast.
You don't like Kelsey Grammer as Beast?
Man, fuck Frasier.
You know, I think that's a good place to end it. Fuck Frasier. And I don't think it really gets any better than that as far as the sign out goes, except for Jared, do you remember what the sign out from the last one was?
I think it was fuck off, homie, or something.
Yeah, that's 100% what it is.
Nice.
Unkind.
It's a little rough. I don't want to scare people away with only this two episodes in, but you know, the one or two people that will actually listen to us will probably actually think that it's okay. Hopefully at this point, if this is the second one that you're listening to, this will have been up for people to listen to, possibly on iTunes and stuff. We'll see. And you can subscribe to it at those places if you want. Also, don't forget, as we kind of mentioned, mostly me trying to plug the Hard Men to Please podcast itself, where you can hear all of us talk about Star Wars, and I think Star Wars mostly, all three of us is just mostly Star Wars. And there is also a Geekstrom Twitter, which I actually, thinking about it now, I don't know if I actually said the word Geekstrom at the beginning of this podcast, so people are probably listening to this entire thing going, what is this podcast called again?
Why did I click on this randomly?
But Geekstrum, with the strum spelled STRUM. Do you guys have anything that you want to plug necessarily before we all sign off?
Follow me on Twitter at Antipalma. This is my name. Or Instagram at dip.draws.stuff. All one word. And that's all I have. I have nothing else going for me.
Yeah, nothing. Same. I'm at Justicide on Twitter. Get me to as many followers as Anthony has. In fact, if you follow him, follow me instead.
Yeah.
And We'll do a nice annotation for everyone in the bottom of this here description for this podcast. So see you later, guys.
Smell you later.
Bye.